This is probably a dumb idea, but I'm attempting to watch all of the Marvel movies between now and when Infinity War comes out at the end of April, and I don't know how that will go. I have to admit up front, I have to make sure that credit is given where credit is due. I have to make sure that I am appropriately attributing my sources and giving the proper citations. When I say that 100,000% of the idea for this came from this thing that Ryan Broderick from BuzzFeed, and I think another dude whose name I don't remember, who may also be from BuzzFeed or is otherwise a friend of Ryan Broderick, doing what they're calling 38 Hours of Marvel, which is watching all the Marvel movies in one sitting, which is bananas. That's not what I'm doing. I just want to watch them all over the course of the next month. I had already been curious about the idea of doing something of like looking back on this now almost decade. Has it been a decade? Maybe, if not very close to it, of Marvel movies before the new one came out. And thinking about maybe doing something like that on one of my podcasts that I do. And at the very least, I want to do something where it's like, all right, let's rank the movies or let's talk about what's good and what's not. And then this happened, as well as, I think it was Greg L. Mercer. I think they were the one that did it. That on Twitter being like, hey, send me your rankings of the Marvel movies, and that'll happen on the same day that like 38 Hours of Marvel was starting up, and I was like, all right, this is fun. Wait, let's do this. Let's watch the Marvel movies. And like I said, I don't have any desire to do them all in one sitting, but I did yesterday watch the first five in one sitting, which was a lot. I watched Iron Man, then Iron Man 2, then Incredible Hulk, then Captain America, then Thor. And that was a fun time, given that I'd never seen most of those movies in you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 years. And some of those movies, namely Incredible Hulk and namely Thor, I'd never seen ever. But it was a fun, it was a weird sort of way to go about things, and sort of seeing how it wasn't really until Thor and Captain America that like the look of what a Marvel movie is started to take place across the shape, across the look of the film. Like the first Iron Man does not feel the way that the modern Marvel movies feel like. It's the editing and the cuts are a lot more feeling kind of like a Jon Favreau type movie. There's a lot more like cuts to gags and stuff like that than you would ever see even in like the sillier, funnier Guardians of the Galaxy type Marvel movies. And it's not really until you get to Captain America that you're like, all right, yes, this kind of looks like what I'm anticipating. And despite the fact that Kenneth Branagh apparently has never met a Dutch angle that he did not like, and they are all over the place in Thor, ignoring that, it's like, yeah, this kind of looks like what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. looks like. This kind of looks like what these later Marvel movies are, the Avengers movies and stuff, are feeling like. So that was neat. Incredible Hulk being the monstrous outlier pun, not intended, but close enough. In that it looks like hot garbage all the way through and is very bad. I had a greater appreciation for Iron Man 2, I think, than I remembered having. I remember being pretty meh on it the first time around, and like after watching it again, I was like, no, you know what? It's pretty solid. It's messier than the first Iron Man, to be sure. But like it in ways that aren't bad, and it's got so much like good stuff floating around in it that it makes for an entertaining soup, even if not necessarily a cohesive soup. You get some Black Widow, you get Sam Rockwell being Sam Rockwell, which is always fun. You get a pretty solid, interesting movie. But the first Iron Man's better. I really liked Captain America. I remember being pretty mad at the first time through, and like I watched it again, I was like, wait, this is the best of these first five by not by a mile, because like the first Iron Man's pretty good and Thor is actually pretty good too. I loved it. I don't know how much of it of my loving of it now is related to that I have so much more attachment to these characters that are being introed in this movie. So it feels sort of like going back in time to watch the origin story of someone you already really like. Steve Rogers, Bucky Barnes, Peggy Carter, people like that. Versus when you're sort of seeing it for the first time and first getting introduced to any of this. I could understand why I would have felt more meh about it at the beginning. And I think I think it works better as like a prequel nestled within the story than as the first thing you know about Captain America. That being said, that is with the like I'm only saying that because knowing that background about Captain America was very helpful for me to start to like him in the later Avengers movie. So like I needed to know that background in order to understand why he was cool in later movies, but I needed to have seen him being cool in later movies to go back and appreciate and enjoy my trip through that earlier background. And also Peggy Carter is the coolest, and it makes me feel bad that I don't actually know if I ever finished Agent Carter when it was on the air. At the very least, I know I was, you know, delayed, and I would watch it months and months after seasons would go through. It was the same thing of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. of like I liked the show plenty. I liked Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. more than I liked Agent Carter, but I would get behind on it and then not stick through with it, and that's upsetting because it was a good show, but no one watched it, and therefore it got canceled, is my assumption as to what all happened with Agent Carter. But I'm not 100% sure on that, so who knows. Dang, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a fun show, too. I'm like 17 seasons behind on it, though. Beans. But, the first Captain America movie and Peggy Carter, it's just like, she does not get a ton to do in that movie other than just be badass not Mary Sue is a problematized term. So it's not that she's a Mary Sue, but like there's elements of, she does not get the depth that she gets in later, in her own TV show, for instance, that does a much, much better job of diving into who is Peggy Carter and what makes her tick rather than just being the sort of comic book character that she is in this first movie. However, she's a very cool comic book character, and it's a cool comic book character in a comic book movie. So you know what? Rock and roll. I also think that probably part of why I was a little bit meh on the first Captain America the first time around through was because I was watching it on a date, and the date was somewhat awkward because I am not good at going out on dates with people. And also like it was a little bit of that like that sort of like, oh yeah, I get this is a date, right? But no one ever went all the way to say that it was a date, but it was this thing of like, hey, we both know that we have crushes on each other in that we have told each other that, and then we said let's go hang out, and then we did, and then but never was the actual conversation broached, and therefore it was a lot of like, let's PG-13 watch a Captain America movie. Also because I'm a square, we wanted to go see Horrible Bosses. We couldn't go see Horrible Bosses because while I was 17 and she was 16 at the time, so they wouldn't let, she couldn't buy a R-rated ticket herself, and I also couldn't buy one for her because you have to be 21 in order to buy R-rated tickets for people that are under 17 or whatever the deal is. Then her being significantly cooler than I was like, all right, let's go sneak into Horrible Bosses. And I think we like almost tried for a bit of a second, and then I wussed out on that pretty aggressively hardcore, and then we just saw Captain America instead, which, I mean, to be fair, it's not, that's one aspect of my personality that certainly has not changed, the like unrepentant rule follower in the face of minimal authority, the authority being like people at a Regal Cinemas over in Seattle. Who gives a shit about any of that? But you know, such was life. But got to go see Captain America, got to run into two of our friends that were also there. That was also part of why the date was awkward, because we just happenstance ran into one of my best friends and another friend, a friend of ours. And I was like, oh, well, okay, this is what's happening, I guess. The Marvel movies, I'm curious to see what it'll be like as I roll through all the rest of them and what it will be like getting that full sweep of the story of all of them, especially as someone like me right now that I'm pretty meh on Marvel movies. I'm definitely sort of You know, I think that was my big problem seeing Black Panther, of like, Black Panther ruled, but it was also a Marvel movie, and I'm kind of meh on Marvel movies at the moment, so I sort of was torn between those two things about like, I really like this movie, and also this movie is very important, but also it's a kind of movie that I don't particularly want to see or, you know, scream from the rooftops nowadays. So, as with all things, I sort of... No, not as with all things, as with very few things, because I'm an unrepentant narcissist who loves to hear himself talk. I sort of was like, Black Panther's great, and I'm going to talk about how good Black Panther is a little bit, but mostly excise myself from that conversation, because literally no one wants to hear someone being like, I get the movie is good, and there's parts of it I really liked. I'm also down on Marvel movies right now. It doesn't need to be said. So that is why I'm saying it. Yeah, I don't know. Marvel movies, man, they're just like, I'm getting down on them. Even the ones that should be good, the like Black Panthers, the Thor Ragnaroks, I see them and I'm like, all right, yeah, those are Marvel movies. Cool, chill, down. I'm trying to think of the last Marvel movie I genuinely loved, because, I mean, Black Panther, I genuinely enjoyed it. That was a very good movie. But other than Black Panther... Not so hot on Guardians 2, not so hot on Thor, not so hot on Civil War, not so hot on Age of Ultron. I guess Age of Ultron was sort of the turning point where I was like, oh, okay, maybe not. I didn't see Ant-Man and I didn't see Spider-Man, and I've heard Spider-Man's very good, and I've heard Ant-Man's pretty good too. So probably, yeah, I'm thinking about it. It must be like Guardians of the Galaxy and that summer of 2014 when Guardians of the Galaxy and Winter Soldier both came out. Wow, that's depressing. That's depressing and upsetting. Because that's been a grip. Now, what am I watching nowadays? I saw Thoroughbreds 3 times in theaters in the last 2 weeks, which was fun. That's one of the benefits of having MoviePass, is that I feel no compunctions with just going to see Thoroughbreds many, many times, because I like that movie so much. Also, it's short, which means it's much easier to go out to the theater and see it many times. And at the theater, movie passable theater that it's closest to me, it is one that not a ton of people are going to see, which means that the thing that sucks about MoviePass is that the theater that's closest to me is not particularly close. It's still like a mile and a half away, which is far if you are in a city without where you don't drive and don't have a car, and there's not like a clear cut public transportation. I would have to like take multiple buses or bus to a train kind of deal in order to like get there purely by public transportation. So usually I walk, and it's about a 45-minute walk. Anyway, it's Don't Be Creepy, Gary the Privacy Concern Clown. I problems with my OPSEC. But it is that's it's a little bit of a hike away from me. I can use MoviePass there, but it's reserved seating, which sucks for MoviePass. It's great in every other circumstance, but it means that I have to either go to see movies that aren't very popular, so I can, when I get to the theater, there will still be seats available, or I have to go early in the day to grab my seat using the MoviePass, and then come back at a later date, or, as it usually happens, hang out at some of the stores that are nearby the theater for an hour or two, because I go early to grab a seat, and then have to hang around until I actually want to go into the theater. It would be great. Oh, yeah, if it was not reserved seating, then I could just show up, half hour early, an hour early, get my seat, hang out, and, check Instagram while I'm sitting in the theater. But not so much. No, Thoroughbreds is such... It's so my kind of movie, in that it's two girls that decide that they want to murder their stepdad. That's not necessarily why it's my kind of movie. No, it's my I like that it's being billed as American Psycho meets Heathers, which is very reductive and not necessarily correct. But if anything, is much more on the American Psycho side than on the Heathers. It is not a zany comedy. The way Heathers is. The Heathers inspiration, as much as there is one, whether it was an actual inspiration or just like, hey, parallel thinking or being inspired by things that were inspired by Heathers, is this idea of like, hey, let's give teen girls and teenagers more depth than you might necessarily in other types of media, and in particular, the depth to be horrible little monsters that do terrible things for not particularly great reasons. I don't know. What I like a lot about this movie is I appreciate that it sort of just, it lets the two main characters just be who they are and then rolls with that rather than, and you know, it brings in characters like Anton Yelchin's, such a bummer to, I mean, it was great to see Anton Yelchin be very good, but it was such an unbelievable bummer to see him on screen and like, oh, you're so good. And was taken before your time. And I am very sad about that. You know, using the Anton Yelchin character to sort of provide a counterpoint, say like, hey, you girls are operating on a separate plane from the rest of reality, and that's dangerous and that's upsetting, and that's scary. Maybe don't. He's still used for that, but it's not a movie that like tries to dive into the heart of like, why are these girls like this, or try to you know, do a deep exploration into any of those things or try to moralize about it. It's much more just like, this is the circumstance, this is where we're at, and we go from here, which I really appreciate and I really like, and it makes for a more fun movie, I think, than not to say that there's not, you know, there's anything against the kinds of movies that are, you know, let's take someone that is troubled or take someone that is disconnected from the way the rest of the world works and you know, explore how they got there and explore their origins and explore you know, their connections to the world, whereas this is much more like, they're separate, we're gonna roll with them, we're in their head, we're in their, not even in their head, we're in their in the passenger seat as they move along through the world, which I find very interesting, and especially for a, you know, quick thriller, is, I think, a very interesting and appropriate way to go about things. And again, that's sort of the American Psycho way of, it's not that it's, we're along for the ride as all of this, all of these shenanigans happen, which I like, which I think is fun, which I think is good. Yeah, Thoroughbreds is a very fun movie. Also, Anya Taylor-Joy is just remarkable. I texted my friend after the second time that I saw it, of saying that I'm attempting to sort of kind of try, not very well or very dedicatedly, admittedly, attempting to write a horror script, a sort of horror comedy kind of thing. And I was like, okay, I need to decide which of my three main characters do I want to be fantasy casted with Anya Taylor-Joy, because she is very, very good in this movie and very, very good in The Witch, and very, very good in general, and makes me actually want to kind of see Split, which I didn't particularly, well, I don't know, I was torn about Split, because when the trailer for Split came out, I was like, oh, this looks like this would be a really good movie, except I'm just not super here for the aggressively, like, in Year of Our Lord 2016 or 2017, whenever that movie came out, not super here for the, like, aggressively reductive and incorrect way that multiple personality disorder, which I don't even know if that, I think dissociative identity disorder is the correct terminology for it now, but anyway, this, like, the movie version of what multiple personalities is like, which is not, I was sort of like, I don't know if I need to watch a movie like this, but A, I've heard it's pretty good, and B, I don't know. I think it is, that's an interesting sort of side note of a thing that if you like horror movies that you sort of have to wrestle with, you know, sort of embodied in this idea of, like, the final girl, and embodied in the idea of, like, monstrous feminine, and all these sort of, like, interesting critical lenses that you can take onto horror movies of, like, they exist in this weird middle ground between, there's some things, because they are so focused on the taboo and the things that are outside of appropriate and polite society, there are ways in which they both press against the problematic dominant power structures, and ways in which they reinforce and buy into those. It's not a clear cut, like, is good and progressive, is bad and conservative. It's a, and even again, yes, conservative and progressive do not necessarily match up to good and, you know, the moral axes of good and bad, especially when you're thinking about, like, cultural stuff. But the, it's a lot messier. The final girl being an awesome trope example of that, of, like, there's something really interesting and progressive and feminine, feminist in interesting ways of, like, you have this, the main character is usually female, and the character who usually prevails at the end is usually female. And the character that you're usually identifying with and rooting for tends to be female in a lot of these movies. But also the ways in which her femininity is expressed, are often problematic. And also it goes along with this, like, the overall framing of the movie is usually that, oh, it's this female character getting, lots and lots of physical violence, placed upon her, enacted on her over the course of the film. And so how does that gel with then her rising up and triumphing against it, and it becomes this very messy middle ground. And so all that to say, in thinking about things like Split, if you like horror movies, there's an element to which you have to be comfortable enough engaging with aspects that are problematic, because they will inevitably exist in things. That doesn't, I don't know if that necessarily, I mean, not that I don't know, I for sure that doesn't necessarily mean that you always, you have to give it a explicit pass about, like, who cares about that. I think it's still something that you should, you know, critically engage with, to some extent or another. But it can't be something that you completely eschew, because frankly, I could not think of any, I can't think of a horror movie that does not have something disconcerting about it in some way, shape, or form. And I think part of that is because it is, again, they are films that live in the taboo. They are films that live outside of what is acceptable, by their very nature, because they're about the scary stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I'll probably try watching Split, especially because there's only so many times I can see Thoroughbreds over and over again. And I need to see more Anya Taylor-Joy stuff and decide whether I want her to be the lead, the best friend, or the killer in my horror movie that I am attempting to write. Yeah, I also saw Happy Death Day, which is so good. Oh my gosh, I'm really kicking myself for not having watched it when it came out in theaters last year. It looked interesting when it was in theaters, but I just never got around to it. And oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, does it rule. Oh boy, is it so very fun. Very much in that Scream mold of, well, Scream mold in tone. I think there's a couple different things about Scream. I don't remember. Oh, I haven't even talked. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. They're thinking about Scream and thinking about, like, the tone and the mold and the influence that it has on horror and on horror comedy, I think is something that's actually very well explored in the Scream MTV show, which I adore, and I burned through 2 seasons of that in like a week and a half, because it was, it's so fucking good. But the tone of Scream has, there's the element of it, and I think the thing that gets picked up on a lot is how self-referential it is, and how self-aware, and how much it's willing to, like, make meta-commentaries on horror as a genre, and slasher as a genre, and that's definitely an aspect of Scream, without question. The more interesting aspect of it, and part of its tone that I like, is this sort of heightened reality that sort of has the... I mean, there's some aspects of the tone that are like result of the production, and that it's, you know, low budget but slickly produced, and you know, just feels tight and coherent and well made, which is definitely something that you see in a lot of like Blumhouse horror movies. I'm thinking about, you know, like Get Out or Happy Death Day or stuff like that. That, like, they are not, you know, big lush big budget films, but they are still competently competently made, well produced, like. They just look like good, slick movies, which is really cool. But I think it's that they have... It's the similar tone that Scream has that something like... It's like a less heightened Clueless or a less heightened Legally Blonde. That sort of... Yeah, it's, you know, a step down from Heathers, a step down from those sort of big over-the-top teen movies, and instead lives in, you know, one step above true to life, you know, verite type stuff and indie stuff, but one step below the crazy, over the top, heightened teen movies. And I think that's really fun. I think that's something that you see a lot in the Scream MTV show, of like, it feels like has some sort of similar tonalities to A Pretty Little Liars, to a Gossip Girl, to a VOC, that sort of stuff, though dialed down just a little bit from the sort of it's not quite as fast talking and quite as glamorous, and also much more full of murder. But the Scream MTV show is so good. And has highlighted a trope that I apparently adore in fiction, which is the bitchy mean girl who secretly has a heart of gold and becomes a very good wing person, a wing woman for the rest of her friends that she learns to love and connect with. Because I just love that and everything. Oh, I also finally finished Gossip Girl for the first time. I finally got all the way through to the end last week, and it was in, I probably should have saved the finale for Gossip Girl for not like one of the more egregious depressive spirals I've had in a very, very long time. Because I just sort of like burned through and was like, okay, yep, I'll watch Gossip Girl. Cool. Done. Whatever. And there was without much fanfare and without much, memory of the experience. But yeah, yeah, it was interesting. It was a weird sort of thing to close the chapter on something that I, you know, started watching when it was on the air when I was in middle school, end of middle school and getting into high school, became a one of the first topics of conversations that inured me to a lot of my high school friends at the very beginning, of like, especially the female friends, of like, oh, he's the one dude that watches Gossip Girl. But I never really watched past season two. Then every couple of years I would sort of rewatch it on Gossip Girl and still get up to about season two. And this was the first time that I pushed through, burned all the way to the end, and got through the slog of season four, the egregious slog of the first half of season five. Though if you'd, I wouldn't have necessarily believed you if you had told me that like, hey, Gossip Girl becomes a bad show in the middle and then becomes a good show the minute Georgina Sparks comes back into the, as a part of the main cast, halfway through season five. Like, if you had told me that, I'd be like, that sounds too on the nose for me as a person who has one love in his life, and that is Michelle Trachtenberg as Georgina Sparks in the television program Gossip Girl. But gosh almighty, it is true. Gosh almighty. The show sucks through season four, through season five, until halfway through season five, Georgina Sparks comes in and becomes the best as Dan's fixer and agent manager person. And it's, oh my gosh, it's a blessing. It's a blessing. I don't think this was a good one, personally. I think it was a little too over the top, if we're going to be real. Not over the top, all over the place. That was the thing I was trying to say. But that's okay. It's been several months since I've done it. And to be fair, the entire reason that I am doing this is because I made a bullshit promise to myself that I would do at least two podcast episodes released per month. And this one got away from me, and so there was only one that came out. So we got to do one of these. We got to do one of these and throw it out there. And it is going to not be good, but that's okay, because I also removed it from my website, which no one looked at anyway. So the only people that know about this are the people that are already currently subscribed. And if you're already currently subscribed and you, then you have listened to worse. You have listened to worse than this particular one. So that's okay. I do want to bring back the end song thing though. That was really fun. I think I figured out a way to hook it up so that it'll record directly from Spotify. So, we're gonna try and rock and roll. Let's see how loud this is. But try to rock and roll with a little bit of end song tunage. I started listening to, this is a song, Top Down by the Flavor Blue, which is a local Seattle band, that I really dig. I didn't super dig their album, but this song was in it, and I forgot about this song because it was so good that the hook in particular, once it gets to the hook, of like, it just burned directly into my brain. And I only listened to it like two or three times last year, but it was the default like loop that was going through in my head. Like, if I'm taking a shower or something like that, I'd be humming along to the hook to the song Top Down by the Flavor Blue off of their album, what is the album called, Blue something or another, Blue Dreams, maybe. We'll see if Spotify loads. Well, in any case, end song, Top Down, the Flavor Blue. Yeah, off the album Blue Dream. Rock and roll, y'all.
forget.